I think it's super important to stand out. Where I am in Friendswood, Texas, it's very, I don't know the word, it's very bougie. And I personally, like, I stick out like a sore thumb in Friendswood. I am just dark hair, tattooed girl. It's funny, my boyfriend's grandpa was in town the other day and he was telling him, you know, I like Wednesday. She's goth, huh? She's goth, isn't goth. She? I'm like, oh my God, like a 70-year-old man is calling me goth.
You're listening to Untamed, a podcast dedicated to empowering you, the lash artist, while providing insights on how to achieve success that is as individual and unique as you are. Each episode, me, Cheryl,
and me, Anne-Marie, share our best information openly, without reservation. We discuss challenges, best practices, and what the future holds for the lash industry.
So grab a snack and your comfiest sweater and get ready to geek out with your new lash BFFs. Oh, and don't forget to subscribe.
Hey, Lash friends, and welcome back to the Untamed podcast. This is Anne Marie, and today I have Wednesday of Wicked Aesthetics with me. We actually did a part one answering questions on product misconceptions, diving into product development of adhesives on her podcast, which is called the Wicked Lash Podcast. So be sure to check that episode out and then come back and listen to this one. Because for part two, we're just going to roll right into different avenues that lash stylists have before them in the lash industry. So welcome, Wednesday.
Oh, I was going to say welcome. Thank you so much, Anne-Marie. Oh my goodness, I haven't been on someone else's podcast in forever. This is so interesting and different.
I know, it is kind of interesting. It's like we're both used to trying to like guide the conversations with the guests, and now we're having to be the guest. And it's like, wait a minute, like trying to turn that brain to a different mode is hard.
It really is. We just got done with my podcast where I was asking all the questions and I'm like, okay, I totally got to like switch gears.
That's a challenge. We're got this. Can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and your journey in the lash industry?
Yeah, I'm Wednesday. I own Wicked Aesthetics Lash Studio in Friendswood, Texas, which is a little bit outside of Houston. I have been an esthetician since 2014. And I have been doing lashes for 5 years. Before I did lashes, I just fully did waxing for my whole career. But actually, I've been like every position you can think of in the beauty industry. Like I've been a receptionist. I've been like an hourly service provider. I've been a booth renting service provider. And now I'm a salon owner. I opened my salon March 1st, 2020,
oh, wow.
Which is like really crazy timing. But yeah, I'm still here. I've survived. I currently still do lashes 3 days a week, which is pretty hectic when I'm also trying to manage a salon. But yeah, I have kind of a mixture of renters and employees. And I also do some education here and there. So yeah. I actually met Anne-Marie at a training in 2019, which is so crazy to see how far you've come.
Same to you, though. It's been so fun. That was just like a whole different point in like my career for sure, because that was like kind of really recently after I was in this car accident, kind of restructuring my entire career, which still in the lash industry, funny because it's so similar, but it's so different. So that was pretty cool. And I think for you too, like that was a time before you start opening your salon. Like we really had a lot going on within that next year after we took that training.
It's so crazy.
That was so wild. Well, thank you again for being on this podcast. I really want to dive into all the different experiences you've had and the differences about it. So I want to start with talking about you from the salon owner side of things. Now, what made you decide you wanted to open a salon?
So initially, and of course, things are like always changing as creatives, we're always like changing our mind and changing our goals. But initially, it's just because I was lashing in a 10 by 10 room. I was fully booked. I kept raising my prices and like my clients did not want to leave me, which I'm like forever grateful for.
Nice.
I've always had such a solid and loyal clientele, but I was just like turning away clients left and right. And I really wanted to hire someone. And then not only that is I also wanted to do trainings. Like I was only just doing one-on-one trainings in my little room. And I wanted to have a space where I could host trainings and like be able to offer bigger trainings and that sort of thing. And my ideal vision was I wanted to hire someone like as an employee. And thankfully, I actually didn't have employees when I first started because that would have been super hectic. Like with the COVID shutdown and all that, like I would have had no idea how to navigate that. Not to mention, I literally had a 9-month-old son at the time. Wow. So yeah, there was just a lot going on. And so whenever I first moved into that studio, I just had all renters, which was super amazing. There is a huge difference because with renters, I mean, they're the ones paying you rent and they are essentially their own little business within your business. So at the end of the day, you don't really have like too much of a say in like what they do, like what they charge, what they wear to work, that sort of thing. Which is fine. There are definitely pros and cons to that.
So for you, do you prefer having the booth renters or having the employees at this point? Like, is there one that you kind of gravitate towards liking more, or is it just like a complete split for you?
It's weird because I feel like every service provider has their own different goals. And that's why I like that we kind of have an option in the industry. You can still have your own business as a booth renter, but like you don't have to pay for like this huge salon. You could just go rent a room from someone else and like you're still your own business. And then sometimes people like they just want to do lashes and they don't want like anything to do with running their own business. They don't want to have to pay for trainings. They don't want to have to buy all their own products and like manage their clients and that sort of thing. They just want to come to work and lash and then leave and leave their work at work. So to answer your question, I really like the idea that I'm able to offer both right now, but it is a little hectic and confusing, especially to clients because they don't like not every client really understands like how a salon works, how the beauty industry works. So it's kind of hard to tell whenever you have a mixture of employees and renters, like, okay, like who actually works for this business, you know? But I would say pretty much like right this second in my life with all of the stuff I have going on, having like all renters probably would be like a little bit easier for me at this point in time. But I do like the fact that I have those employees that like work directly under me. They're using the same exact products as me. They have the same knowledge as me, and my clients automatically trust them because of that reason. And to be super transparent, I am getting a more financial benefit to that as well. So I guess actually that doesn't really answer your question because I can't really answer one or the other. I think they both just like have their pros and cons, honestly.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I can see the benefits to both and challenges with both too. Now, we have a lot of stylists who have that same goal of wanting to have a salon. What would you say if they're trying to navigate knowing if they should do employees or booth renters? Like, what is your advice on knowing how to set it up? And do you think it's actually sustainable to do both? I know you're proof that you can, but has that been difficult for you? Or would you do it the same way if you did it over?
Yeah, if I could start over, I would definitely just have one or the other because like I said, like not everything is streamlined. Like it can be confusing to clients and your accountant. Like it can just be like kind of confusing. I think if you have a good understanding of the beauty industry, it's fine. But like, I don't know. Honestly, if I did it all over again, I would just kind of like get more clear on my goals and try to just do one or the other. So as far as like deciding between which one you want, so at the end of the day, you can have more of a financial benefit if you have employees versus renters because you do have that potential to make more money. But with gaining more money, just know that that also requires more work. So like, I don't know, I always compare employees, like it's like having kids. You have to worry about them 24/7 if they're sick and they can't come to work. You have to take care of their clients, figure out how to reschedule their clients. You have to make sure you have enough products. You're always on top of ordering products. You have to make sure that they are like everything's good with customer service and good with their techniques. And it's not just like training them because, you know, like in the lash industry, it's so normal to just have like a 2-day training. When you have employees, that's not the case. You can't just have a 2-day training and then send them off and then they're fine. No, like they're working with you every single day. So you have to be there holding their hand essentially every single day. You have to market them. And when they're not like super booked at first, you have that stress that you never thought you would have again, like when you had in the beginning of your career, oh my God, I'm not booked. I don't have any clients. What do I do? You kind of have that stress like all over again whenever you're trying to grow your employees' books. But again, it can be super rewarding. But if you're lashing full time, and that's kind of where I messed up, like I still lash full time and I like do other like trainings outside of my employees and that sort of thing. And it's really hard to worry about someone else's books and someone else's career, essentially, when you have so much going on in your own career. So sometimes it's not like super fair to them. Luckily, I always like hire like go-getters and people that are self-led. But at the end of the day, I should be there like holding their hand more. And then I also have my own child on top of that. So if you have like a lot going on in your career, if you want employees, like your main focus in your business should be your employees. If you have a lot going on in your business and you just want to work alongside other beauty professionals, then having renters could be beneficial for you because you still have like that coworker atmosphere and you're still working alongside other people doing the same thing as you, but you don't necessarily have to manage them. You don't have to train them. You don't have to worry about their inventory, what they're charging. No matter if they take a vacation or if they're sick, at the end of the day, you're still getting the same amount of money from them. So it is a lot less stress and work, and you know you're going to get that same amount of money from them no matter what.
That's really interesting to me. It's fun to like hear your experiences and how you've like navigated it. I really liked how you mentioned that as a salon owner, you need to be investing back into the staff. And if not like a manager, someone needs to be there who's really investing back in the staff. And you mentioned making sure that their careers are doing well. That's something that I think is easily forgotten a lot of the times. It's not just bringing someone in. It's great. You're just going to make this money off of them and you're still going to lash full time and just like ignore that someone else is in there with you. It's a huge investment to have somebody work with you. And it was also for me, like kind of heartbreaking at times because you would see all this potential in someone, but they might not like want to really tap into that. And it's like, you're spending all this money, all this time investing in them. And then they're still just kind of like, meh, throughout the day. Did you ever have those experiences where like you hired someone who just was not a good fit for you, wasn't really that go-getter?
Yeah, and I think it's really hard when it's someone that's brand new to the industry and they have like not really like a sense of how the salon environment is. And like, for lack of a better term, I just don't think they understand like how good they have it. They don't understand like how much it costs to like buy all these products and like the marketing and the online booking and like client care, like and the training, like they don't realize like what all they're getting, like essentially for free. So it's kind of just like lost potential because they're not really like appreciating it. Now, I will say my two employees that I have right now, they actually started out as renters having their own business and they decided that it just wasn't for them at this time in their life. And so they are super appreciative for everything that I provide for them that they don't have to worry about. So it's definitely like a different aspect for sure.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, that kind of ties into the other part of what I want to ask you is you've been on the side of renting as a solo artist and working for someone and salon ownership. I think this is really cool because there's a lot of different elements there. Can you explain what it was like to have those experiences of renting solo versus working for someone? Like, what did you like about each? What did you not like?
So whenever I was an employee, I actually worked for a huge like corporation. I mean, I talk about it all the time. I worked for European Wax Center. And so it just kind of sucks that like typically the people that are running those types of places don't have any knowledge of the beauty industry. They are just kind of people that like have a lot of money and like buy. It's like someone that buys a Starbucks or buys a Chick-fil-A. Like they don't necessarily know anything about the food. I mean, maybe I can't speak for them, but most of the time it's just someone that's like investing in this company. It's just like someone that has enough money to like invest in this type of thing. And they've never been a service provider. They've never waxed anyone, you know? So it's kind of hard with someone telling you what to do and giving you rules and telling you how to do your job and telling you how to manage your clients when they've never done that before in their life. So it's, and most of those like corporations are very like sales based. You almost feel like you're a salesperson and not a service provider, which isn't. I recommend if you ever want to be an employee somewhere to go work at like a smaller company where maybe the owners are someone that has been in your shoes before, because they will be a lot more understanding, or just someone that like has done their research of the beauty industry and just like someone that actually knows the ins and outs of the industry, and they're not like giving you these rules and whenever they've never done what you do before either. And they just want you to sell products and like that sort of thing. And I mean, I didn't go to school to be a salesperson. Like I went to school to be a service provider. So yeah, it's just, it can just kind of be discouraging when your leader is someone that has never been in your shoes before. That being said, people like me and Mo, like people that have salons that like have actually been a service provider before, I would say working somewhere like that can be a lot more rewarding because your boss is going to be someone that has already walked in your shoes. And it can be really like motivating and inspiring because you know that owner has been in your shoes before and like you have potential to maybe one day be in their shoes. And then as far as booth renting, I liked booth renting, but then at the end of the day, it was the same thing. I have booth rented at a few different places, and everywhere I rented from, it was the same thing. Like the owner was still someone that just like had enough money to open something like that. And they didn't really, I mean, they just like kind of saw us as tenants. They weren't leaders and like they didn't know anything about my industry. Like they just kind of saw us as numbers. But I really liked the fact that I essentially had my own business, even though I was just like, and I was only paying for a room. Like you don't have to pay for utilities and like that sort of thing. And it's also really nice to like work alongside other beauty professionals like hairdressers and nail artists and like facial estheticians and that sort of thing, because it's super easy. Like, especially if you work at a salon suite place where there's like 50 rooms, like you have so much potential to network with other businesses and other artists and like kind of cross promote each other and trade services.
I can definitely relate to the part where you're saying that some of the owners, they're not in the industry or they don't care. They're just trying to like expand their portfolio or they see it as a good investment opportunity. I think when we all sit down and think about it, there's a lot of things that we're like, ooh, I'd love to invest in that. That must bring in so much money. But two of the places that I used to do a suite rental from, they did have managers who cared. Either they were like maybe in the beauty industry or they really did care about the tenants and it made it a lot easier. But sometimes that direct communication with the owners was hard. So I like that you actually brought up that point because I really didn't think about that, that it's not just being unappreciated in a salon, you can actually be renting your own suite and still feel that like underappreciation or undervalue.
Yeah. And I will say something I kind of left out about like being an employee somewhere. I know a lot of those places kind of get a bad reputation, like those big franchises for that, like most people will go work at right after school. But I will say it is nice that like at the end of the day, I still got hourly pay. So like, even if I didn't have a client, like I still was making hourly. So that was really helpful. And that's probably why I stayed longer than I should have, because like I was used to that financial security. And then you do learn, like you get like such an influx of like different clients, different types of people. You learn a lot about customer service. I learned how to wax super quick. So I definitely did benefit from working somewhere like that. I don't want to say it was all bad, but at the end of the day, yeah, it's just really discouraging for your superior to be someone that has never been in your shoes before.
Yeah, that can be a little hard. Oh, I see where you're coming from. Now, what do you think the experience is like to work for someone like you or other just independent salon owners versus like a big chain? You mentioned that that's going to be a bit different, but is that something that you think is actually beneficial? Now, you own a salon. You're not going to tell people like, hey, don't work at my salon. I want employees. But Honestly, from your perspective, if you found the right salon opportunity and you didn't have yours, would you work at one?
Yeah, I think it's really cool because especially that I do still lash, like I have like an open door policy, like you can come watch me lash whenever you want. You have that ongoing training and mentorship because I've been in your shoes. I know how to grow a business. I actually encourage them. I'm like, I know you may not want to be an employee forever. Like you are probably going to want to go somewhere and be a renter one day. So like you should be taking notes of like everything I'm doing when it comes to running my business. Like there's a lot you can learn, and they get to experience the products that I buy. Like, they know that I'm using like high quality products. That's not something they have to invest in right away. Like they have the ability to use what I'm using. They get to experience my clients. And then it's really good because let's say I call out because my son is sick or I'm sick or something. Like I can pretty much just move all of my clients to them. And you know, they're getting my clients and it's easy because we're using the same products. I've trained them so they have the same technique as me. Everything's like streamlined because I've like trained them to be just like me. So I think it's super beneficial because I still encourage them to market themselves on social media because at the end of the day, like clients are going to want to come to you because of you. But sometimes they get booked just because they're on my booking site and people see that I don't have availability. So they're going to click someone on my booking site instead of trying to find another salon, you know? So I feel like there are just so many benefits to working under someone that is already established because I'm basically like handing you everything I've ever done on a silver platter.
I like that you really invest back into your employees and you want to see them succeed. I do find that some owners don't want to. Like, obviously, they are wanting to make money off of their employees being there. That's why they have them. But then when it comes to actually sharing openly or giving these resources, they're very timid. They're very worried about, oh, I'm just going to do all this for that employee. They're going to take what I teach them or invest in them and just leave. And that's always a possibility. But if you're wanting people to work for you, I think it's the right thing to do and to wanting them to grow. But do you know what I mean? I've definitely seen that in this industry where it's very conflicting. It's like you want these employees because you see them maybe as a number, but then you're not investing back into them or you're coming from a place of just fear that they're going to leave and take everything from you. Which, what is your take on that? Do you think that's possible for one of your employees to leave and just completely ruin you?
Yeah, I mean, I have had employees leave. Like, I actually just had one employee leave because she wanted to be a renter, and I didn't really have that opportunity available at my salon. And yeah, she wanted her own business. And I mean, I did train her and literally how to do everything, but I was like, it's also very rewarding that, like, I'm the one that allowed her to be able to start her own business. I look at it as that, like, I was the stepping stone that, like, allowed her to flourish. And I encourage her, I'm like, yeah, take all your clients, like, tell them where you're going, you know? Like, I would never want, like, that animosity. And again, like, the whole theme of this is, like, I've been in her shoes too. Like, I think it's super important as an owner to, like, be supportive of someone that is ready to spread their wings and fly and go do their own thing. Like, encourage them to take their clients and that sort of thing. Because, yeah, I mean, think about it. If it were you, like, you've probably been in their shoes as well. And there are, like, so many salon owners that, I mean, and I know contracts are important, but when it comes to, like, non-competes and stuff like that, I don't want to say I don't agree with it because I know every situation is different, but, like, I've never had anyone sign a non-compete or anything like that. I mean, at the end of the day, this is someone's career. Like, they have to make money. Like, I would never want to ruin someone's career, and I would hope that they feel the same way about me. I think it's just you need to have a mutual respect. Like, y'all are both professionals in this industry, and even though that person was your employee, like, you should still be happy for them and want to see them succeed because this can be a cutthroat industry.
Yeah, it definitely can. That's so interesting that you say that you've not done any type of, like, non-compete or agreements or anything like that. I definitely had them, but they had a flexibility to it. It was really just outlining kind of mutually my agreements that I write are never just to benefit me. It's to make sure that the staff member is also protected. But I've definitely seen that where it's like, you can't work within 100-mile radius. And it's like, that is massive. And in the state of Texas is not going to hold up because you can't tell someone that they can't make money. So it's kind of a tricky thing depending on your state too, if that's even going to work well. I like the mutual respect. I really like that. And obviously your business is still here. So losing an employee who took their clients to go do their own thing did not completely shut you down or ruin you. And I think that more stylists who are like thinking to own salons or who own them need to hear that. It's like, it's not going to be the end all be all for you if you're doing good branding too. That was something that I thought was really interesting is sometimes when a staff member left, they did have clients who followed them, but sometimes if you build your studio branding up well enough, they want to come to that studio brand. That's what they're there for more than they are the individual stylist. It's a little bit different of a world.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely had some like stay, but yeah, it is really important to just have like strong branding and marketing and like always catering to your clientele. And even if you're the owner and like you're not their service provider, like still just letting it be known to that client, like make it a point to like introduce yourself and like be known to them. So like maybe potentially they want to start, I mean, keep coming to that salon, like no matter what, kind of like you said.
Yeah, I like that. It's like, I know it's a balance. It's like, I want to see the staff members succeed. And if they have that ambition, like, cool, awesome. But then I don't want them to empty out a ton of clients. But then at the same time, lashing your full clientele might only be 40 people to make really good money. So you're not stealing like in hair where it's like, and I say stealing very lightly. It's in quotes, but you guys can't see it. It's like stealing like 300 clients. Like it's just a good handful. You can replenish, keep it rolling, never be complacent that like you have enough clients in your salon. Keep thinking, how are you marketing and getting you out there?
There are always enough lash clients for everyone. I feel like this industry will never be oversaturated.
Oh, you heard it here. Wednesday said it. A lot of stylists say that it's oversaturated. They're afraid to do things because it's oversaturated. I don't want to open another salon. There's too many. I don't want to teach. There's too many. I don't know if I'm going to be able to have enough clients because there's so many stylists in my area. Like all this just fear that there's too much competition. How do you like have the mindset you do where you're like, it's not going to be oversaturated. There's enough clients. Like how do you navigate that? Did you ever have those doubts?
I think it's just because like I've been in the industry for almost 10 years. Well, I have been in the industry for 10 years if you count like the times I've like been a receptionist and stuff like that. But I think just because I've seen it all and like I just know that it's impossible for like the beauty industry to be oversaturated because also like look at the pandemic, like whenever we closed down for COVID, I think we were all just more busier than ever whenever we opened back up. Everyone was in such a hurry to get their lashes done. I was fully booked like within minutes of like being back open again. And like I've just seen it because I've worked in hair salons before too, is you will have those ride or die clients that come to you for like 20 or 40 years and then they're going to build your business for you too. Like send all their family members to you, send all their friends to you, their kids to you. And yeah, I just think it's impossible for this industry to be oversaturated because there will always be too many clients and not enough service providers. Like that's just always going to be how it is. And then not only that, I would say in my area, there are a lot of people that charge very low for lash extensions or like maybe work out of their house. And like, that's totally fine. I'm not knocking that. Because there is a price point for everyone and there's a clientele for everyone. But I would say like even premium price lash artists like myself, we will never be oversaturated. There will never be enough of us. And believe it or not, there are clients that like only want to go to someone that is like charging premium prices. And I know you can relate to that as well, being in the Woodlands.
Yeah, I had one client who found me and it always stood out with me. And she was just like, what do you charge? And you know how we're always like, the what do you charge question. Yes. But she asked and I just started going into here's like what my process is because I try to kind of explain what I'm all about, share about myself or my studio and then tie in the price. And she was like, oh, okay. Like I've been calling all these places and they're so hella cheap. Like that just can't be right for something I'm putting on my eyes. She's like, let me come in for a consultation. So she was actually calling around price hopping to find someone who wasn't too cheap. And that always stood out with me where I was like, wow, You know, I don't need to have that mindset of like someone calling and asking price as being necessarily a negative thing. I thought that was so interesting. And I like that you said that, you know, there's enough room for everyone and that different price points exist for a different reason. On a different podcast, I talked about a friend who charged less than me and made more than me because her overhead was just different. So I'm not saying everyone go out there and do $20 lash sets, you know, but you know, it doesn't have to be $400 full sets. It could be a little bit more affordable.
Yeah, there's a price point. And then like there are people that like maybe they would prefer to go to someone's house. And then there are people that would prefer to not go to someone's house. Like that would scare them, you know. There's so many different clients for everyone. So yeah. And I mean like look at the nail industry. I don't know. This might be like a really bad comparison. There are nail salons like on every corner and like they're still in business. Like there's not going to ever be too many lash artists. Like people want to get their lashes done. And if you have that good, solid like clientele, just like all of your client, like you're just doing fills like every day, like that's kind of where I'm at. You have that good, solid foundation and those people will literally like help build your business for you. So that's just the way I see it.
I absolutely love it. Totally agree with you. Like you're going to build your business. You got this, guys. You got it. So Wednesday, you're talking about how there's a lot of different types of clients. We can be at different price points. We can kind of have our own vibe. You're really good at branding. And when I first saw it, it was a type of branding style that I never really saw. It just caught my eye because it was very unique and different. And now it's like I recognize it immediately or I'm out and about and I see things that remind me of you.
Thank you.
Because your brand has like stuck with me. And that was even before like I really got to chat with you a ton. It was just something identifiable. And I think a lot of people get caught up in trying to figure out their aesthetic, figure out their branding. What is your advice for a stylist who's solo and is like, I am struggling to get clients. I'm struggling to get my name out there. Like, what would you tell them? How can they, like, do you have any tips? I don't want to just like take away everything that I know you sell, but
no,
you know what I'm saying? No, like, can you share some tips with us? Like, help us out. I don't even know my question, but like, help us out.
It's so important to stand out. Kind of like you said, first of all, thank you for everything that you said. That was super nice. But it is true. Like I have clients that they just like see things that remind them of me all the time. I think that's basically what branding is. And especially when you're putting like content out there, you want your goal to be that like someone looks at that and they automatically know that it's you that posted it like before they even see your name. But I think it's super important to stand out. Where I am in Friendswood, Texas, it's very, I don't know the word, it's very bougie. And I personally, like I stick out like a sore thumb in Friendswood. I am just dark hair, tattooed girl. It's funny, my boyfriend's grandpa was in town the other day and he was telling him, you know, I like Wednesday. She's goth, huh? She's goth, isn't goth. She? I'm like, oh my God, like a 70-year-old man is calling me goth.
That's so cute.
But I'm like, who taught him that word? But it's so funny. And you don't like typically see that in Friendswood. So I really like that my business is there because I like really stand out. And then my business name, Wicked Aesthetics, my landlords like wouldn't even let me put Wicked Aesthetics like on the sign. Like they won't let me put the word wicked anywhere. So it's kind of funny. Like that's just how much that like my business stands out where I am, which I think is super important. And then like when people are Googling like lash extensions near me, mine just sticks out. Like you can just tell on Google or if you're driving by or just like me as a person. So I think that's super important because when people are trying to find a lash artist and they're like going through all these different people, like you want to make sure you're standing out, whether it's your quality of work, your branding, that's just off the wall and like not even comparable to anyone else around you. And then even just me charging really high prices makes me stand out too. So that kind of makes them want to dig in more like, oh my God, why are her prices so high? And then if they do enough research, they'll see like how knowledgeable I am and that sort of thing. So I think it's really important to just like make yourself known and stand out. I don't know how many times I've said stand out. Oh my God, I feel like I'm just repeating myself. Sorry.
No. But
yeah. Basically, you want to stand out from your competition because, I mean, as we all know, there are a lot of lash artists probably around you. And that doesn't mean that this industry is saturated, but you want to make sure that you're getting seen above all. And then when it comes to Instagram, you are your brand. I know it's like super scary at first to show your face and show your personality and like share your story. But at the end of the day, like you are your business. And if clients are following you and they've seen your face, they've seen your personality, they've seen what your studio looks like, they know your whole story, like they're going to want to go to you above someone else that's just posting lash photos and they have no idea what that person looks like because they already kind of feel like they know you. I have clients that come to me. They finally book an appointment after they've been following me for like 1 or 2 years and they already know like everything about me.
Wow.
Yeah, which is, it's kind of funny, but yeah, I love that. And then when it comes to branding, you want your brand to be what you actually like, not what you think that like your ideal client is gonna like. I have seen some people say, oh, before you figure out your brand, you need to figure out your ideal client. I personally think that's the opposite. That's just me. I understand where the other side of the argument comes from, but I think that's just me because you're the person that has to like live inside your brand. And it's super hard to create a brand if you're not being authentic. Like my brand is literally just what the inside of my head looks like when it comes to my colors and fonts and my visuals and that sort of thing. Like it's stuff that I genuinely like. And that's why I have fun creating stuff because I actually get joy out of creating it. If you're like struggling with creating your branding and like showing up on Instagram, like it's probably just because you're being inauthentic. Because if you're being authentic, it shouldn't be scary and stressful and that sort of thing. So at the end of the day, just be yourself and stand out. And hopefully that helps.
No, that's such a good point. And I really, really like your take on being you to attract clients. And I think that's one of the things that was always a disconnect for me with the whole, who is your ideal clientele? Because I'm like, well, you know, it's hard for me to want to like exclude someone first off. And then I'm sitting here thinking like, okay, they might, well, like I just kept going in circles and circles and circles when I've been asked that type of question, trying to figure out who am I trying to attract? And then when I look at my clientele now, it's very, well, now I don't take a lot of clients, but like it was very like all over the place. You know, one thing, there were some commonalities within the clientele, but they were all attracted to kind of what I was putting out, which was just the style that I had at the time. And then the fact I was so focused on education and protecting their natural lashes, giving them just like a custom appointment. Those were the things that they were really interested in. And I like that. I think it's like when you're staying authentic to you, you're going to gain a clientele that works well for you. So even if you want to identify who your client is, you need to make sure that when you look at who that ideal client is it someone you actually relate to or someone you are like aspiring to be? Does that make sense? Because I would see people put these together and they would pull in just like all this random stuff. And then I would look at the stylist who's like presenting who their ideal client is. And I'm like, huh, you know, that doesn't look like someone that you would ever go out for coffee with. How are you going to gain that person?
Because I put myself out there so much, I feel like the people are booking with me are just people that know that like they're gonna vibe with me. So if I was being super fake online and these people were booking with me because I wasn't being myself, like at the end of the day, I'm not, if they think I'm like this perfect, polished person, they're gonna be real disappointed when they start coming to me every 2 weeks and they start to get to know the real me. And like, I'm not like that. So, you know, that would be kind of deceiving.
I see exactly what you're saying. I'm like, yes, yes. I hope everyone kind of like assesses that because that is probably a bit of a misalignment a lot of stylists have when it comes to trying to gain clients. Because a lot of these stylists, they're putting out good content. They're being consistent. They're doing this stuff. They're trying to get their website going, but there's just that break in there. And I think that's hard. Like I look at what you create and I'm like, man, this is so cool. I love it. It's awesome. And I can draw a lot of inspiration from it, but that's not my natural style to create something in the colors and in the same type of wave pattern or checker pattern or anything that you create, even though I can admire it. And I think we can easily get caught up in being like, ooh, I love what someone else is doing. I want to copy it.
Yeah, 100%.
But we're all unique and we can all get along being unique. So Great, great, great advice. So outside of just having really cute branding, obviously definitely showing up and letting people know that we exist. I think that's so important. That was like the bio on a website. So if you're on social media, like you've got to still show your bio. Like where's the about you on your Instagram, guys? So besides that, what do you think is like the most efficient way to gain in new clients? Is there any type of marketing tip that you have or promos that you ran or anything like that in the beginning?
So when I first started, and I think it was like 2017 and 2018 when I like first started to like pursue my business full time and get serious about it, I ran an ad on Facebook, and like don't even ask me about Facebook ads because I don't know how I did that. This is like the only time I've ever ran a Facebook ad, I think, but I think I like might have bought like an ebook or something, but I did. It was basically like $20 off a full set, but you have to comment that you want the coupon and then I'll send it to you. Instead of just being like, okay, anyone that books gets like $20 off, you know, like it kind of, first of all, it gets you more engagement on that ad because they're having to comment. And then second of all, it opens up that conversation. So like they have to message you and then you can kind of introduce yourself and then send them like a little personalized like gift card, $20 for so-and-so. And yes, I literally typed out everyone's name because I had nothing else to do. Like, what else did I have to do? I was starting a business and I didn't have any clients. That's one thing, is a lot of people start a business and then they're like, oh my God, like I don't have any clients. Like I'm just going to sit at home and like be sad. And I'm like, even if you're not like getting paid and you don't have any clients, like you still have to like act like you're working. Like that's kind of how it works. But anyways, yeah, I had nothing else to do at the time. So I literally got on Canva and typed out everyone's name that messaged me and was like, $20 gift card to so-and-so from Wednesday, like expires on such and such. And that kind of like opened up a conversation for like them to get to know me or ask them like any questions they may have about lash extensions. So I did that in the very beginning. I don't do promos too often now, but I will say that I definitely have a consent form like on your online booking so you can see like how people are hearing about you, because I didn't realize this, but like so many people find us just from Google, just Googling lash extensions. I swear we get more bookings from Google now than Instagram. And it also helps that like you can see all of our reviews on Google and Vigaro, my online booking that I use, like we have almost 100 five-star reviews. So obviously like make it a huge point to ask your clients to leave you a review. And then also make sure you have like your whole page set up on Google My Business. Like it's free. It's just so people can find you through Google, and make sure you have like pictures on there and like all your info's up to date, like your hours, your address, your phone number, your website, and like headshots of everyone that works there. So yeah, don't underestimate the power of Google. And I guess don't underestimate the power of Facebook ads. I haven't done one since then, but I swear I still have clients that come to me from that. So I was doing $20 off a full set. So that means I was charging $80 for a full set. My fills now are $95 for a fill, and I still have clients from that ad. So that's kind of crazy.
That's amazing. I like the creative thought process behind that and actually taking the time to customize it for that customer or potential customer, yeah. The lead, because
I mean, I had nothing else to do.
Yeah. It shows like care. It's like, oh my gosh.
I would never have time to do that now. So like, don't underestimate not having any clients. Like that means you have so much time to go like above and beyond.
If you're taking the time to write to Anne Marie from Wednesday on something to give to me just because I commented me, I'm going to be like, whoa, I bet I would get a good service. Like she's already showing me that she cares and she's doing something like customized. Like it's all subliminal. You know, they're starting to pick up on these things that you're taking the time to do. And I think that when you get someone in, I used to do kind of like something similar, and I would give these gift cards to a hairstylist and she would give them out to her clients. And I offered, you know, brow waxing, some other less expensive items. And sometimes they would come in just for that, and it would just get them in the space. They would get to know me, and then they would like lead into the lash extension side for me. So getting them in that door is what you just got to do. I love this. I'm curious how many people are going to be running ads now, doing something similar. That's so good. And Google, we can't forget it. I think that outside of just maybe some referrals or that one hairstylist friend that I had who helped send a lot of clients to me, it was all Google and website for sure. That was like a huge chunk of it. Now, do you have a website too, or are you mostly just through your Instagram?
Yes, good point. I wanted to talk about this. Yes, I have a website. I made a website when I only had like 2 clients. Don't think just because you don't have any clients, like you don't need a website. Websites is, like I said, about standing out. Like a website is going to make you stand out because that Homebase/artist, or like, which by the way, no shade to Homebase/artist. Like I have so many, I don't want people to think, like I have so many friends that do lashes from home. I don't think it's bad whatsoever. We just don't have the same clientele. Tell is the only point I'm trying to make. But yeah, like that client that may not want to go to a Homebase person, that your potential client, if you are in a salon, you want to have a website to like showcase your salon, have a page of frequently asked questions, have all of your service. And I know when you have an online booking site, like you can have your service descriptions and all that, but it's only so limited. You can only add so many pictures. You can only do like the same layout as that online booking. Like a website is so much more customizable. You can really like showcase your style and your brand, your personality. You can put a whole bunch of headshots of you in a bio. You could even have a video like introducing yourself. That's something I've been wanting to do. You can have directions on how to get to your studio. Like, please have a website. Stop what you're doing right now and have a website. Like, it is so important. And that really made me stand out in the beginning too, because lash extensions were still so new in my area in 2017, 2018. And the fact that I just had a website like really made me stand out.
I would hear that a lot. It's like, oh yeah, I was interested because of your website, or the call would come in because yeah, I took calls. It wasn't always just like text. That's like how old school I was. And they would say like, oh, your website, this, your website, that. There was so much info. Or just the fact that I had one kind of just like, made them just like so interested. So I think it's great, great advice. And I mean, Google's a great tool if we know how to use it. Starting with the, what did you say? Google My Business website and reviews. I think reviews, the power of you having 100 5-star reviews. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
How did you get all those reviews? Did you do anything to get people to write them?
No. I use Vagaro as my online booking, and you can also do email marketing on Vagaro, but I made like an automated email. So like 24 hours after someone's appointment, it sends them an email. And my clients probably hate me because even like my clients that come every 2 weeks, like they still get this email every 2 weeks, but because it's automated for everyone. But it's basically just thank you for visiting Wicked Aesthetics. How was everything? If you had a great experience, please leave us a review. Here's the link. If you did not have a good experience, here is Wednesday's number and you can call or text if you have any questions or concerns. So it basically just lets them know like they can be heard whether or not they were happy, or if they weren't happy, it kind of opens up that conversation. But most of the time, I mean, if they had a good experience, it's only going to take a few seconds to go leave a review real quick. And I've even had my newer like employees and stuff like that kind of ask, like once they get a good rapport with their clients, like I just have them be honest. Like, hey, I'm still building my clientele. Like it would mean so much to me if you could just leave me a review real quick. That way I have more reviews on here and maybe it'll help me grow my clientele and other people will want to book with me. So it doesn't hurt to just be like honest and communicate. Like people are so good about wanting to support small businesses and that sort of thing.
That's true. I like that you just straight up ask. And I also really like that in your automation, this is a really good takeaway, is that if they didn't have a good experience, you gave them like an exact place to go so that they're not flooding your reviews with maybe an experience that wasn't great for them, which probably didn't happen too often, but them just knowing that like, hey, I'm here to listen if you aren't happy, and you can get in direct contact with like me or once you have staff, like the owner, that's really, really cool. And I like Vagaro with that, like all that automation. You guys, I'm always talking about it. If I haven't sold everyone who listens yet, I don't know how I'm going to sell them, but I like that it breaks down like location. Like, is it clean? Is it comfortable? Like, it has all these other things they can review too. So it reviews like the whole location and then the stylist like separately. I really like that part about it. I remember when I first saw that, I was like, what?
And then it has like COVID readiness. Like, yes. I'm like, okay, they sent me, they like put a badge like on my Vagaro page, like, this business is COVID-19 ready. I'm like, okay, cool.
Right. Yeah. They were like really wanting to make sure that some businesses had like those sanitary practices. And I know that was a huge thing for my clients, but they weren't concerned. They were like, oh, I know Anne Marie's already clean to begin with in her studio. Like, she'll be taking the right precautions. And what I realized with that is I didn't have to do anything different. Like, I was already doing all those sanitation practices.
Same. I know. Same.
So it was like very like natural. It was like, okay, that's cool. I didn't feel like I had to go up in price because now I'm sanitizing and I wasn't before.
Yeah, exactly.
It was very interesting. A lot of people reached out and they said, hey, I really know I haven't been doing my due diligence on cleaning. And, you know, I was happy and thankful that people felt like they could approach me and ask like for tips on that. But it's also kind of scary to think about. Just side note there. Oh, gosh. So did you find that having that badge like helped your business, or just having this Vagaro page with reviews? Like, do you ever have people comment on, hey, you had all these reviews, that's why I came to you. Hey, you had your badge.
Oh, yeah. They've never said anything about the COVID badge, but oh my God, yeah, I get so many just inquiries just because of our reviews. They're like, oh my God, you have so many reviews. That's why I wanted to come to you. Like, I really trust y'all, like, even though they've never been in before. Yeah. And then a lot of people love the online booking, how it's super convenient. And then we also, like, just everything is online. Like, they fill out the consent form online. You do everything online. You get an automated email before your appointment telling you how to prepare and how to get there. Like, I have so many, like, automations that benefit me and the customer. And then they really like that, you know, all the services are broken down. And on the consent form, we also are like, please describe, like, what kind of look you're going for. You know, like, we're really, it's really, like, a detailed consent form. They have to sign that they understand like all the aftercare rules and they understand all of our policies, and they also get it all in an email. Yeah, I would not be able to run my business without Vagaro. It's literally my entire life.
See, guys, I'm telling you, I didn't even tell Wednesday to talk about Vagaro, but if you haven't tried it yet.
Do you talk about Vagaro? I didn't know.
Oh my gosh, all the time, all the time, all the time, all the time, all the time. It's almost like always in the show notes because I'm mentioning it at some point because it really helps guide your business. And if you follow along everything that it has, it's going to help you grow. You mentioned the email marketing, you mentioned the forms, like all these cool things. Oh, and it will text too. Oh, it's great. It does so much good stuff. So you can get like a free trial of it. So if you haven't tried it yet, guys, that's all this podcast is about, but I'm plugging it low key, waiting to be sponsored, but it's not happened yet. It's fine.
I know, same.
Well, Wednesday, thank you so much for sharing so much information with us. This has been such a delight. One thing left for you is if you could tell our listeners like how they can connect with you. I'll also put all those links in the show notes. And also, if you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice that you wish you heard when you were a new artist.
Oh God. Okay. You can find me on Instagram at Wednesday the Lasher or at wicked.aesthetics. Those are both my Instagram accounts. My DMs are always open. Sometimes it takes me a couple of days to reply because I have a 3-year-old, but I always reply to my DMs at some point. So if you have any questions at all, don't be afraid to reach out. I also have a podcast called The Wicked Lash Podcast. So feel free to listen to that. I will be at LashCon. So come say hi to me if you're going to be there. And then one piece of advice that I wish I would have heard. I wish someone would have told me that full books, like if you're a lash artist, for example, full books means that like you have all fills, like you should not be worrying about booking full sets 24/7. If you see a bunch of full sets on your schedule and you're like 3, 4, 5 years into the business, that doesn't necessarily translate to full, like a full book or a full clientele. And what I mean by that is you should be more focused on getting those return clients back in than constantly trying to get new clients in the door. So always be treating your current clients like the first priority. And I promise they will build your business for you. And thank you so much for having me on here. This was so much fun. I hope you guys enjoyed.
That's all for this episode of Untamed. Thank you so much for joining us today. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at untamedartistry.com. Don't forget to subscribe. And remember, as your study buddy, we are always here for you. Don't hesitate to send us a DM at untamed.artistry.